This is Weekend Edition from NPR News. I'm Scott Simon. Dan Shore is away, so joining us this week to review the week's news is David Tell, the opinion editor of the Weekly Standard magazine. Good morning, David.
Good morning, Scott.
Thanks very much for being with us.
Sure.
And let's begin with events in Iraq. Campaigning opened this week for the forthcoming elections. Prime Minister Alawi, perhaps not surprisingly, has entered the race. More surprisingly, he announced that pretrial hearings are going to soon begin for 12 of Saddam Hussein's aides, including most prominent, I think we could safely say, is the man known as Chemical Ali Hassan, Hassan Ali Majid. This is a country that is undergoing an electoral process now, and people wonder whether it has the wherewithal to hold an election. Does this government, this country, have the wherewithal to hold these very public trials?
Well, I think the announcement, the idea of trials beginning so soon, 6 weeks in advance of this first extremely important democratic electoral process, took us by surprise, because the idea that the Iraqi government, the provisional government, would risk the appearance of a high-profile, sort of now it's our turn payback trial of notorious criminals from a former regime, struck people as odd. Technically speaking, however, it's not a surprise, because the Iraqi special tribunal that will be conducting these trials has been nominally up and running for a year. And if anything, Prime Minister Alawi has been under intense domestic pressure to get things moving more quickly. There's a lot of resentment that it's taken so long. They've had a lot of problems. They have to train judges for the first time. A lot of Western human rights groups have been resistant cooperating with forensic evidence and whatnot, because the tribunal will be using a death penalty, which people oppose. He's had a lot of trouble getting these things started. What's going to happen next week, alternately described as arraignments, formal charges, or the beginnings of investigative hearings, are a sort of preliminary step. I think we're designed to, a halfway measure designed to get him off the hook domestically without spooking people overseas.
Let me ask about, as the campaign begins, about the prospect of a boycott by many Iraqi Sunnis. The Sunnis seem to be split now between those who want to vote, those who want to boycott, and those who want to vote but are literally afraid for their lives to go out and participate in the process. To what degree does this undercut the legitimacy of the election, as it'll be seen around the world is one question, but even within Iraq?
Well, I think it's safe to say that the 60% of Iraqis who are not Sunni won't mind if the Sunnis wind up not participating too much. They do think it's their turn. There is, nevertheless, the risk of violence. The violence, if anything, in fact, resentment, domestic resentment over the violence has made Shia participants in the electoral process a little more dogmatic and unresistant to bending. Any exaggerated effort to encourage Sunni participation would only make things worse. The electoral process, however, there is violence, as you point out. It's a serious risk. The elections are going to happen one way or the other. I think it'll probably result in campaigning largely taking place on television.
I want to move to events in the Ukraine, because we had the sensational announcement this week from doctors in Vienna who confirmed that the opposition leader, Ukrainian opposition leader Viktor Yushchenko, was poisoned. In fact, he has the second highest concentration of dioxin poison ever recorded in at least a living human being. This would certainly, one would think, interrupt his ability to campaign as effectively as he'd like to. Could his near death, we must assume, have the prospect of actually making him look like a less promising candidate for office, raise the health issue of all things?
Well, his doctors, the Austrian doctors you mentioned, believe it or not, say that he's in perfect condition. His lead doctor said, notwithstanding this high dosage dioxin poisoning, said that dioxin poisoning is the sort of thing that if you survive the initial attempt, you're okay. You'd never know what to look at him. Of course, he has these horrifying facial lesions. But aside from that and occasional abdominal pain, we're given to understand at least that he's okay. He was expected to win this runoff election. If anything, the assassination attempt, if it's safe to assume that's what it was, will make him a sympathetic candidate, more likely to win. But I don't think Ukraine will be out of Ukrainian democracy will not be out of the woods, even if he should win, because Prime Minister Yanukovych said just Thursday, 2 days ago, that he'll never be president, his opponent, because if he does win, as expected, the Prime Minister's own supporters will take to the streets and shut the country down.
And what ask about Turkey? This week, open-ended talks began that could lead to Turkey joining the European Union, though perhaps not until 2015 or even later. I know this has been a particular interest of you. Turkey's been interested for more than a generation in joining the European Union. Must be said, there are people in the European Union now who are, in our American terms, surprisingly blunt about saying, you know, it's just not our kind of country.
That's right. European countries in which Muslim populations have become a domestic political issue, France, Denmark, Germany to an extent, were resistant to the idea of Turkish accession to the EU. They remain resistant, and they've had to promise their populations that even if Turkish accession should be approved at the EU level, it'll be put to a popular referendum in, on a country-by-country basis. Mm-hmm. There are countries in which there is serious domestic resistance to this. In Denmark earlier this week, some WAG opponent of Turkish accession rowed out into Copenhagen Harbor and put a burqa on the Little Mermaid as a protest gesture. The Turks themselves...
That Little Mermaid statue's been through a lot in recent
years. Yeah, she gets the worst of it no matter what. The Turks themselves aren't entirely happy with this resistance. They kind of resent that they're made to jump through extra hoops, and it remains to just be seen how this will work out. It's years away.
Yeah, I want to turn to U.S. politics while we have you here. There was a chorus of rising criticism against Secretary Rumsfeld, I think it's safe to say, and it's not coming just from Democrats. Senator McCain of Arizona, former General Schwarzkopf, I guess we still call him General Schwarzkopf, Chuck Hagel, Senator Chuck Hagel, Bill Kristol, who was the editor of the magazine for which you work, and Trent Lott, former Republican leader from Mississippi, have questioned his handling of the war and certainly his recent expressions. How serious are these comments?
Well, with all due respect to my friend Bill Kristol, I think Trent Lott's voice might be the most important here, not necessarily because he's the most influential senator. He's no longer majority leader, of course, or because he's particularly admired as a deep policy thinker, but because he's such a sort of conventional and it's thought typical Republican. His objections to Don Rumsfeld, I don't approve of Don Rumsfeld, I think is what he said at a Chamber of Commerce speech in Mississippi earlier this week. Mm-hmm. That means that Secretary Rumsfeld's starting to fail the Republican finger in the wind test. The most important finger in the wind, of course, remains the president's, and the president seems to like Don Rumsfeld, and Rumsfeld seems to like being defense secretary, so I expect he'll be around a while. Lott himself said, I wouldn't want to see Rumsfeld fired. I don't think he should resign anytime soon, but I'd like to see a change sometime in the next year or two. Mm-hmm. It's a little ambiguous. Rumsfeld's up in the air.
This raises the question, though, about whatever power an incumbent president has after he's been reelected in a second term, because there's a belief that at some point you begin in the full flower of happiness that you've received a mandate for a second term, and then you begin to realize, well, you know, you're not running for reelection, and therefore people on your side in the Senate, ostensibly, have their own political judgments to make because their name is going to be on a ballot in the
future.
That's
right. And the president has bit off a rather ambitious policy agenda, which includes Social Security, for example, some issues on which the Republican caucus in the Senate and the House, for that matter, isn't necessarily unified. We don't know how these things will work out. There's going to be a big fight looming about judicial appointments, and the Chief Justice of the United States might resign. So we don't know how these things are going to work out. These happy times after re-election, they tend to last not very long at all. Domestic politics will return in a big way, and we don't know how they'll work out.
Mm-hmm. Because the Republicans, like the Democrats, have another presidential election to prepare for. Well, Mr. Tell, it's always a pleasure having you with us. Thanks
Likewise.
Very much for
Thank
being
for
with us.
Me.
David Tell, who is opinion editor of the Weekly Standard magazine.